This is Fresh Air. I'm Marty Moscoane. Bernardo Bertolucci's films tend to cause a stir. The controversial Last Tango in Paris was banned and got him convicted for obscenity in Italy. His four-hour epic 1900 was a grand commercial flop. Then, in 1988, The Last Emperor won 9 Academy Awards, including Best Picture and Best Director. Richard Corliss wrote in Time magazine that in the 60s, Bertolucci was a charter member of the first generation of directors who were bred to break the rules of narrative film. His was the smartest, most restless camera style in the business. Bertolucci's new film, Little Buddha, is about a Tibetan monk's search for the reincarnation of an important Buddhist Lama. He believes the reincarnate is a little boy in a typical American family in Seattle. Mixed in with this contemporary story is the tale of Siddhartha's mystical adventures on the path to enlightenment. The film stars Keanu Reeves as Siddhartha and Chris Isaak and Bridget Fonda as the young boy's parents. Bertolucci shot spectacular scenes in the Himalayas, in Nepal and Bhutan. He says the idea came from a newspaper story.
In the last few years, it happened to me to read on the papers that a little Spanish kid was found by a few Tibetan lamas to be the reincarnation of Lama Yeshe, a famous lama, a scholar, a writer, who died exactly the same moment, more or less, when the little Spanish kid was born. And I started to get interested in this relationship between the lamas, Tibetan lamas, who go around the world hunting for little kids who can be the reincarnation of their teachers. And that made me very curious. And so I started to look around and to read about Buddhism, to read about reincarnation. And in 91, I went to meet with the Dalai Lama and to tell him, because I was a bit nervous, you know, I'm not a Buddhist. So I went to see him to tell him, in fact, to ask him if it was possible that somebody non-Buddhist, as I am, could do a movie on Buddhism.
What did he say?
Oh, he laughed at me and said, of course, you will have a fantastic level of Buddhist detachment because you are not Buddhist. The Dalai Lama is invincible. He's not only him, I must say, all these Tibetan lamas I met have such a kind of strong joie de vivre. They are so jolly and so playful. You know, the joie de vivre is something that maybe, I don't know in general, but personally, I thought I had lost. You know, when I'd done Shelter in Sky, which is the last movie I've done before Little Buddha, it was so painful, and really there was no joie de vivre in that film. And, you know, it was very important because he opened my mind a bit, especially on something which is a little detail, but very important. There is a word that the Dalai Lama, all the Buddhists, use a lot, and you heard it a lot in the film, which is the word compassion. You know, for my generation, the word compassion has always been a bit not very interesting, you know, because my generation used to like other words, like transgression, revolution, provocations. And compassion was a bit boring. After that meeting, I came out having understood that in Buddhist terms, compassion is a very high form of intelligence. It's the complete, profound understanding of the suffering of the other people. And that was very important for me. And then I met the Dalai Lama 2 more times. Once during the editing, because we had a problem. Some Buddhists in Nepal were accusing us because they didn't like the title Little Buddha. And I said, why? They said, because Buddha is great, is not little. And so I thought that was a bit too naive, this way of judging the title. So I went to see the Dalai Lama. And he asked me, why did you call it Little Buddha? I said, because I want really to be a film that even children can see. You know, I want it to be the basic manual for Buddhism. And so that's why I call it Little Buddha. And he said, keep the title. He said, you know, I think there is a little Buddha in all of us. Which is also something else which I learned from him, which is that the Buddhists think that there is something called the Buddhahood, which is the Buddha nature, that each one, every one of us has it inside. But the fact is that he's asleep. You know, if we are able to wake up this Buddha nature, we all could be Buddha. And that was the second time I met him. The third time was when I finished the film and I wanted to show it to him. And we did a screening with a lot of invitations, and it was a charity in Paris in a big, huge theater with a huge screen. And the Dalai Lama came and did a little, gave a little speech before, and he said, thank you for being here, Tenga. And he said, I must confess you, this is the first time I walk into a movie theater.
He'd never been in a theater before.
No, and everybody was, wow, gosh. And so I sat next to him, and I watched him instead of watching the movie because it was so interesting to see.
What? How did he react?
He reacted like a child. I mean, laughing, becoming very tense, taking my hand, and it was. I was thinking, look how strange it is. I'm assisting to the initiation in cinema of the man who is the great initiator of all Buddhists. And now I was there sitting next to him and witnessing to his cinema initiation. It was fascinating. And at the end of the film, he was like emotional. You know, this after this, you see the bowl with the ashes floating on the ocean in the bay in front of Seattle, etc. And he grabbed my head and cracked my finger and said, wonderful, wonderful. And he stood up and he disappeared in a cloud of bodyguards.
I'm speaking with Bernardo Bertolucci, and his latest film is called Little Buddha. I want to talk a little bit about your life and some of the other films that you've made. Your father is a poet and a film critic. Was it he who introduced you to films?
Yeah, it took me to see my first movies when I was very young. You know, we were living in the countryside next to a city in northern Italy called Parma. He was the critic of the Parma Gazette, but he was especially a poet. So to start, when I was able to write, I started to write poems like him, just in order to imitate my father. Then when I was 16, somebody gave me a 16 mil, and I did my little first 10-minute feature film. And I understood that poetry didn't belong to me, it belonged to him, and that cinema was much more mine. So
Let me ask you about something you said, and this is about your father. No matter how I tried to rebel as a child, he was a step ahead and approved whatever I did. So he made rebellion impossible?
Exactly. That's why that's why I had to make movies about rebellion, because in life it was impossible. It was too smart.
So once you started making movies, you stopped writing poetry?
Yeah. For what I told you, there is a kind of I didn't feel comfortable. First of all, I thought he was a much better poet than me. And then I thought that I could be a better director than him, who wasn't a director at all. You know, the competition between sons and fathers. And in fact, the father figure is very present in almost all my movies. And there are some of these movies which are really based on a struggle, on a search, on a fight, on a, I don't know, yeah. They call it Oedipal.
Well, what does your father think about your movies?
Oh, you know, he doesn't say it, but I think that deeply he feels that he has done it.
Do you mind? Do you mind that?
No.
Sharing the glory with him?
No, it's very good because in some of the poems that he wrote in the last 20 years, I could feel that was some influence from my movies. So that was to give and to have back, you know. But, you know, he's the one who told me in a very simple way, without ever being, let's say, academic or heavy teacher, he told me what poetry is, you know. Once when I was, I don't know, 8 or 9, he showed me a poem that he wrote about my mother called The White Rose. And he compares my mother to the white rose which is in the bottom of the garden. He says, the last bees of the summer visited and etc., etc. So I am very young. I go out, I run to the bottom of the garden, and I see there is a white rose. What happens? That for me, so young, there is no more difference between poetry, which is written, and reality, which is in the bottom of the garden. So that, it was a lesson to see poetry in life, you know, to see what is poetic in the daily life, in everything that happens to us.
I read that you were in analysis for 22 years, is that right?
And you say it like that to everybody? This is very unfair, but now you said it. You know, Freud wrote an essay called Terminable Analysis and Interminable Analysis. I think I'm more the second case.
Well, I'm tempted to say, what took you so long? But what did you get out of that analysis, and how has that helped you as a filmmaker?
I started in the late 60s, after the 3 or 4 movies I've done in the 60s, which were so hermetic, kind of a bit obscure. I think not bad, but I couldn't communicate with an audience. It was like shouting screams in the desert and having no echo, okay? It was like feeling that I was doing a monologue, and I felt quite unhappy because of that. I started the analysis in 69, and I think that it helped me a lot to go from monologue to dialogue, to be able to accept the idea that a movie can have an audience which reacts to it, etc. You know, the cinema in the 60s was, I think, very, very, it was in a very, very important moment, because it was when with Godard and Truffaut and, you know, all the new wave, the French new wave, cinema has been changed in some way, you know. It's been the approach from cinema to life became something completely new, completely different from the classic cinema. So it was fascinating. It was really a kind of a feverish moment for myself. And I was feeling I was like a guerrilla of cinema, etc. Then at the end of the 60s, I told you, I felt a bit sterile, like not having communication. And the analysis not only helped me to have more communication in life, but helped my movies to be more communicative, you know.
I want to talk some more, but first we have to take a short break. And my guest on Fresh Air today is filmmaker Bernardo Bertolucci, the director of such films as Last Tango in Paris, Luna, The Last Emperor, The Sheltering Sky, and his latest movie called Little Buddha. We'll be back after a short break. This is Fresh Air. I'm speaking with filmmaker Bernardo Bertolucci. I want to talk about Last Tango in Paris, which you made in the early 70s. When you made that film, were you aware that it was going to be as controversial as it was?
Not at all.
Were you interested in challenging conventions at all?
Not at all. Maybe there was some little pleasure in transgression, but that wasn't really the reason why I did the movie. I did the movie, you know, as I do all my movies, my movies are kind of a moment of my life, tranche de vie, you know. In that moment of my life, I felt that I was fed up with relationships which were kind of social relationship. And so I had the idea of a couple which is trying to have a relationship which is not based on the social identities, but let's say, let's find a kind of empty place which doesn't belong to any of us. And we meet there, we don't know our names, we don't know who we are outside this empty place. And let's try to communicate just with the language of our bodies. So it was a very, today I think it was a very romantic attempt. Romantic and also very destructive, because in fact it ends very tragically. But what happened is that I remember seeing the film, the rough cut of the film, three people, my editor and co-writer, Franco Arcalli, myself, and the producer, Alberto Grimaldi. I remember me and my editor looking at us at the end, saying, oh my God, what have we done? It's so gloomy. Who will care about this? I was when I did it, I was, I don't know, 30, 31. I said, this old man, he was just more or less the age I am now, hanging out in Paris, really a bit fat, a bit. And then we turn and we see the producer was having his little own private dance, very happy in the bottom, in the back of the theater. And he said, you'll see, you'll see.
So he knew.
He knew, but I didn't at all. I mean, really.
Well, let me ask you something, and I'm sure you've heard this before, because Marlon Brando, who stars in that film, is reported to have said that he felt raped after the making of the film. Do you know what he's referring to?
I don't know, first of all, if he can have said that, because he's a man of such pride that I doubt he said it. But anyway, if he said it, is that the raped person was very much the accomplice of the rapist in that case, because I was much younger than Marlon. He was much more experienced than me. What I done was just to try to have not the Marlon Brando Strasbourg actor studio persona in front of my camera, you know. I wanted Marlon, the Marlon I was having dinner every evening with, and the guy I knew outside the acting. That's why I think that is a kind of rare case, Last Tango in Paris, when Marlon is showing himself in some way. Even if I met him no more than 2 months ago and I told him again, so I stole some of your truth. He said, haha, you think you did. But anyway, I was completely in love with him. I think he gives a
wonderful performance.
Yeah, it's and very different from everything he has done before. But you know what happened? Just a little thing in Italy. Maybe you didn't know it. For that film in Italy, I've been condemned for obscenity to 2 months of prison with suspension, so I didn't. And I lost my civil rights for 5 years. I was unable to vote for 5 years. That's why I'm very, very wounded on that, and I'm very much against censorship.
Well, the film was banned, wasn't it, until 1987?
Exactly.
In Italy.
Exactly. It came out again in 87, 88. Mm-hmm.
Let me try another quote on you, and this is from John Malkovich, a quote from Making the Sheltering Sky with you, and he said, talking about you, Bernardo Bertolucci, he's a charming guy, a great conversationalist, but treacherous as a snake. You've got to expect that anything said in confidence at dinner, a party, or during a moment of introspection will come back at you at an appropriate moment on the set. Do you, as a director, then feel entitled to everything?
I mean, you know, we are together with the actors for 10, 16, 20 weeks, depends. And I try really to, if I can there, to fall in love with all of them in some way. I mean, I'm not talking about sexual love, but to be in love with them, to be in love with my actors, with the heroes, with the goodies, but also with the baddies. So I'm really what John Malkovich says, that if I am amazed by something I hear during dinner or during out of the set, it could be very possible that this thing comes back as a line in the film. I think that the suggestions of the reality are the more interesting for me. You know, the script is there, and also this is why I want to have really very well-written, solid screenplays, because if my screenplay is, if I feel very safe and sure with the screenplay, I can really allow myself for a lot of improvisation.
I just have really one more question for you, because unfortunately we're out of time, but did you really mean to refer to Hollywood as the big nipple when you accepted the Academy Award for The Last Emperor?
Oh my God. First of all, I must tell you, and when I said in front of this thousand of people sitting in this Hollywood shrine, tonight for me, it was, I don't know, the ninth Academy Award that The Last Emperor was getting. It's like a big nipple. I mean, for me, it was very clear, but there was something like between 7 and 10 seconds of silence, which made me feel really, I said, oh my God, what did they say? Why they don't laugh? And then they started to laugh and applaud, and they laughed a lot.
That's a great image.
But, you know, but for 10 seconds, a certain kind of American Puritanism didn't allow the audience to react. They were kind of embarrassed, and then they let them go. And, you know, for Americans, the Oscar is a really major, major thing. For European, it's not our thing. And for me, it was like a children game, you know. It was like being a child again and playing and having incredible gratification, but in a kind of mythological way. It wasn't realistic.
Well, Bernardo Bertolucci, thank you very much for joining us today on Fresh Air.
Thank you.
Bernardo Bertolucci's latest film is Little Buddha. I'm Marty Moscowain, and this is Fresh Air.